This is Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
JBL Tour Pro 3 earbuds are for those who don't conform to the standard.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get into some touchscreen technology, how about the smart charging case, clear sound? These are not standard things. You're only going to get them with the JBL Tour Pro 3, baby.
And I love the sound of JBL when it goes, boom, boom. These earbuds are packed with innovation because you can't stand out by following others.
Touchscreen smart charging case for one-touch control, instant EQ customization, true adaptive noise canceling, and the one-of-a-kind audio transmitter, which can plug and play with everything from game consoles to in-flight entertainment. What more could you want? First doesn't follow. Grab a pair at JBL.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Impact is the book. This is Meteorites That Fall to Earth and what we've learned about our solar system, about life, about water, about our understanding of where we come from. Impact is the book, How Rocks from Space Led to Life, Culture, and Donkey Kong. Greg Branica, cosmochemist, is here. And Greg, you teach me there are three kinds of meteorites that fall to Earth, our classifications. What are they? And you study one particular kind of meteorite, I believe, the CAIs. What is that? First, the three kinds. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll have to slightly correct you. There's a lot more than three kinds. I think there's three main kinds of chondrites. So I'll kind of break it up into that. There are chondrites, which are really primitive samples, and then there are achondrites, which have melted. There are three types of chondrites. One of those, you mentioned the CAIs or calcium aluminum rich inclusions, and you can see why we abbreviate it. That's something that's contained in these carbonaceous chondrites. They're kind of the earliest snapshots of our solar system. So as it was just starting to form.
So the chondrites are important because they are a journey back to the 4 billion years ago when the cloud was gathering itself around what becomes the sun.
That's exactly right. They're very primitive samples. These chondrites are so important because they've never been melted. They really represent a snapshot of that molecular cloud and kind of as planets and planetesimals were starting to form. The very, very beginning, the baby book of our solar system are contained, I guess, within these chondrites, yeah.
All right, the three kinds of chondrites. And there are other kinds of asteroids, stony iron, stony, achondrites, which has to do with whether the substance inside, test me, teacher, has melted or not. And chondrites are unmelted. Is that correct?
That is exactly correct. Well, chondrites are not melted and achondrites are melted. It sounds like we're really boring at naming tests.
Well, but melting means that there is very little water present or no water at all because it's been put in a microwave in some fashion.
There's a lot less water in these the rocks that have melted, sure.
Now, I'm interested, the ordinary chondrite seems, not very compelling. But inside these chondrites, you can, again, teacher, help me, you can identify which side of the snow line they come from. What is the snow line?
So the snow line is something that people who study different planetary systems look at to kind of see what temperature water can exist. And it basically changes on the brightness, activity of the sun, the temperatures involved in the system. But it's basically when water can exist and when it's kind of too hot. Water ice, I guess I should say. So beyond the snow line, there's a lot of ice and water, whereas interior to the snow line, there's a lot less water.
1, 2, and 3 is the wettest. 4, 5, and 6 is the unwettest. Now, I understand you've broken these down. It's very helpful because we're looking for secrets within, and we're going to go inside these meteorites. But I want to pause at the calcium aluminum-rich inclusion. You lost me, Greg. What does that mean? This is your specialty. Help
it
me
is
understand.
My specialty. I love them. They're great. Well, as you can probably guess based on their title, they have a lot of calcium and they have a lot of aluminum in them. And they're an inclusion. So it kind of tells you what it is right there. So they're little bits that are found within these very primitive meteorites. And what's cool about these CAIs, as we call them for short, is that they really are that first snapshot of the solar system. They are what we date to say how old the solar system is. So when somebody says the solar system's, 4.567 billion years old, the way we get that is by dating these CAIs. And I've spent a lot of my career studying these CAIs, and I could talk for days about them, but I don't want to bore everyone.
Well, it's not boring. Right. It's because what you've identified is a clock inside some meteorites, not all.
Yes. So because some samples have been melted post-formation and things like this, they don't represent the most pristine samples. These CAIs generally are considered the first things that formed. And the clocks, isotopic clocks that exists within those are very valuable for us to understand, what was going on and when, and also what materials were making up the solar system, because that was changing early on. There's a collapsing gas cloud that is forming our solar system, and we see that change in these CAIs and then the things that formed after them. So it tells us a lot about how our solar system formed and how stellar systems form in general.
The enstatite, that's what a CAI is, an enstatite. But there are other kinds of enstatite. What does enstatite mean?
Enstatite is just it's a mineral, essentially. It's just a designation of a grouping of elements. Enstatite, certain chondrites have a lot of enstatite in them, and that's just why they're called enstatite chondrites. So enstatite is just a mineral that exists in very early form solids.
I understand. Now we go to the non-chondrite meteorites, and they are called quite logically achondrite because they've been melted. But what can we learn from them? Because at one point I wrote a note down saying some of these come from planets or disrupted planets. Is that how to think of them?
Exactly. Yeah. So because these are achondrites without chondrils, they basically have been melted, and the chondrils have probably been melted away. And when you have a large body that melts, you end up what we call differentiating, so that the iron goes to the core, much like in our Earth, much like in Mars. In large planets, the iron and associated elements will go to the core, and everything else kind of stays, near the surface or the crust. So these samples include samples of cores of planets that we don't have access to any other way. So a disrupted planet, you can get a piece of its core, and we, that gives us an opportunity to study the core of a planet, which we cannot do on Earth.
Those black iron that were noted in by the ancients, are they achondrites? And did they come from planets?
Likely so. So it's hard to know without having actual samples in hand. But likely they were using some of these large pieces of iron or iron-rich materials for their building materials, as is written in the text. And like I said, it's the only way that they could have made iron at the time, or they couldn't make iron at the time. It was the only way they had iron.
So you're like a forensic scientist. You're pulling apart rocks and telling us about where we came from and what other planets might look like, because we haven't traveled to them yet. Early days. Now, Palissite, that's named for Peter Pallas, who was one of the men who advanced the understanding of meteorites. What is a Palissite?
A Palissite is a really spectacularly gorgeous meteorite. It's what we think of as kind of like the core mantle boundary on Earth. So,
this is the one that has green in it.
Yes, there's really these spectacular olivine crystals that are kind of entrapped within a big iron matrix. So it's this really spectacular sample. You cut it really thin and you can shine it up to the light. And it just looks absolutely unworldly, which I guess, pun intended. But they're really spectacular samples. And they were very robust samples, so we have quite a few of them that have survived the fall to Earth.
Now, how does Greg do all this work? He also gives us an appendix. You know a book by its appendix about how people have worked with meteorites since they were first recognized as coming from space. There was originally chemistry, and we mentioned Edward Howard. And you are a cosmochemist, but you have really fancy equipment. Electron microscopes, but even those are discerned between a scanner and a transmission. This is all in the appendix. And then he takes me deeper and deeper. It's kind of like descending into other galaxies. We go to isotopic breakdown, something called the secondary iron mass spectrometry. All of this, is this within the last few years, Greg? How long has this been available?
These have developed over time, of course, but a lot of this machinery got started with the kind of excitement that surrounded the return of Apollo samples. So the race for the moon basically inspired a lot of people for a lot of reasons, some of them political, some of them scientific. But the outcome of that was that people really got interested in space and studying things from space. And it's largely because of that race for the moon that we have a lot of these interesting machines that exist now and really help us answer a lot of questions, not just with space science, but, you know, with pretty much anything we do in science. These are really important types of machines that are just groundbreaking.
What is, you are the cosmochemist, what is solution chemistry?
That's when you dissolve your sample in acid, generally. So you kind of you know, disaggregate it and turn it into a solution. So then you can measure the elements and isotopics really, really well. You can do it without dissolving it, but it doesn't work quite as well.
So you must destroy the village to save it. I understand.
But, exactly.
But at the same time, that allows you to be very specific about, specific is inadequate here. Like a detective, you can go to the scene of the event itself. How detailed can you get? Can you say when something left a certain, when it left Ceres, or when it left Mars? Can you do that?
We can, actually. There's a lot of really cool, not just machines, but chemical procedures that allow us to separate certain elements that we really care about that will tell a story like that, usually in their isotopes. And because we're able to turn it into a solution by dissolving it, then we can basically manipulate it and get just that one chemical element that we care about out. And then it's basically a very clear signal that we can put into our machines, and it's not interfered with by other elements. So that's why we have to dissolve some of these samples. And luckily, John, I just want to say we don't have to dissolve very much of it. So it's not like we're dissolving the entire sample size of a basketball or anything. It's just a tiny fraction.
Well, these are big pieces of rock, I understand. Now, I want to note, before we go to the mystery of organic compound organic molecules, the funding for meteorite study, you mentioned the European Council, European Research Council, JAXA, which is the Japanese Space Agency, much involved in the two Hayabusa missions, and NASA. And the funding looks adequate. Is that correct, Greg?
I would say that we could use more. It's kind of crazy to think about. I make the analogy in the book about what the total amount of funding per year that goes to planetary sciences, and it's not much. If you look at some of the Marvel origin stories, they're 10 times what we spend on trying to understand our own origin story.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spend on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. You know it, your neighbors know it, heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.